Welcome, Dumbheads, to this week's Megasode of MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. Monday through Saturday, I drop one episode per day, identifying the dumbest thing on every single goddamn page of Heroes Unlimited, the gloriously ramshackle superhero RPG from Palladium Books. On Sundays, I combine all the week's previous episodes in one Megasode, like this one. If you'd like to play along at home, we're reading Heroes Unlimited Revised 2nd Edition, 2nd printing, from December 1998. Today we're discussing page 240 of Heroes Unlimited. We're in the Major Super Abilities section, and we're continuing to talk about the same power we talked about last time, Alter Limbs. Yesterday we talked about the most obvious and pretty much best use of this power, which is to turn your arm or arms into guns and convert your viscera into bullets and shoot balls of teeth and guts and bone at your foes until they die. And you do also. In what is, for me, a beautiful act of spite. Like, I hate you so much, I am willing to trade holes in me for holes in you on a one-to-one basis. But there are lots of other things you can do with Alter Limbs, and that's what we're talking about today. Number one, if you are more defensively minded, you can turn your limbs into shields rather than weapons. This has much the same benefits and drawbacks that you would expect. The benefit is, if you turn your arms into a very hard material, you can block swords with them. On the downside, you are still putting your arm directly in the way of a sword, and that hurts. In much creepier news, you can stretch your limbs way out, but not make them more flexible or give them more joints. So you don't stretch like Mr. Fantastic. You stretch out in a weird, like, human stilt way. Your fingers, hands, and arms, your feet, and your legs get twice as long, but are still only articulated in the normal points. So you're like a big, shambling, clumsy monstrosity. There's no indication of why you would do this. No real beneficial mechanics. It's just, you know, I guess if you want to creep people out, you can do it. I mean, obviously, you're going to arrive at this at some point. If these are your powers, you're going to think, hey, can I just make my forearm uncomfortably long, like disturbingly long for no reason? It's like how all kids independently arrive at spinning their tooth around on a thread when they're losing their baby teeth. It's human nature to exploit your body's natural ability to be gross. Finally, on a more mechanically beneficial note for your crime-fighting career, you can transform your legs and feet into means of locomotion to get faster. The first options given here are for non-powered means of locomotion. You can grow rollerblade wheels out of your feet. You can change your legs into bicycle or wheelchair-style wheels. Or, it suggests here, you could even turn both legs into a pogo stick. And these options triple your speed attribute, which is nice, but the aesthetic doesn't work for me. Because remember, up top, your main superhero asset is your ability to turn your arms into deadly weapons, you know? Swords, scythes, machine guns, grenade launchers. Combining that with a pogo stick on the lower body, I'm not feeling it. I'm confused about your brand. Where it's really at is the motorized means of locomotion. You can turn your legs into motorized wheels or treads. That'll multiply your speed by 6, but that's not even the best you can do. I neglected to mention yesterday that if you have one of the minor super abilities of energy expulsion, you know, energy expulsion, fire, or electricity, or brick ray, or whatever, you can shoot whatever your chosen beam is out of your arm and turn your arm into, like, a laser gun, and it increases the range of your blast. And you don't need to pay for those blasts by spending internal organ chunks, which is nice. Now, granted, this is not necessarily the most likely thing to happen, that you'll have both of these powers. Alter Limbs is unfortunately a rare superpower. You would have to roll that and roll energy expulsion, assuming you're doing random rolls. But maybe you chose your powers to go together, or maybe you get lucky with the rolls. If you have these two together, not only can you shoot laser blasts out of a laser gun arm, but, quote, characters who also have the power of energy expulsion can create rocket legs and fly at low altitudes. Now, you'll notice the way I said rocket legs there. That's because it's in italics. That's not a rules term or anything. It's just a little bit of editorial instruction on the way you're meant to say this phrase. And no wonder. It's wonderful. Characters who also have the power of energy expulsion can create rocket legs and fly at low altitudes and at a speed 10 times faster than their normal speed attribute. When the body is down to 15 hit points, it automatically shuts off this power because it costs you 1 hit point for every 2 minutes of flight time. That may seem steep, and, you know, when you're spending hair and flesh to get around, you do want to, you know, keep that budget in mind. At a certain point, it adds up. It's like taking a lift all over town. You know, you get one, you get another one, you get another one. Before you know it, you've got horrible gouges all over your body. But you can get a long way in 2 minutes if you play your cards right. Because once again, in an example of terrible design, we're talking about attribute multipliers. Times 10 to your speed attribute? That means an average person with a speed of 10, no physical training at all, just an average person who uses this power to grow rocket legs, will have an effective speed of 100 in flight. That's like 70 miles an hour. But other multipliers may apply. Can I interest you, for example, in a flying fish man from a fish planet? We talked the other day about how if you have underwater abilities and you are from a fish planet, then that reverses the polarity of your underwater abilities and you get land abilities so that you're a fish person who can run really fast on land. And as we all know, the faster you can run, the faster you can swim. And if you're a fish, you're really good at running. Therefore, QED, a fish from another planet, a fish planet who has rocket legs, if endowed with rocket legs from a magical source who allows him to transform and escape the tragedy of fish rot by traveling to another planet and becoming a supersonic runner, that fish man, I submit to you, will be able to achieve a flight speed of something like 18,750. That is nearly Mach 20, well over escape velocity. If Landman, Earth's fishiest hero, decides that having conquered the sea, having conquered the land, he now wants to go explore space, these rocket legs give him the ability to do that. Now, unfortunately, it does say here that the altitude is limited to 1,000 feet, although I'm not sure. You better have some good brakes on those rocket fish legs, because at that speed, you're going like 54 miles a second. So 1,000 feet straight up is a real short trip. But the dumbest thing here, I guess, is the juxtaposition between these very specific and marginally broken rules. I mean, in the sense that these speed multipliers are really always a bad idea. But nonetheless, these are specific rules meant for power balance, contrasted with the utter absurdity of this power, which keep in mind, like, you can use this with any energy expulsion power. So, you know, with fire or something, I guess I can just about buy it. You know, your legs would be kind of like a rocket. You kind of turn your butt and thigh area into sort of this focusing engine, and you shoot fire out, and that, like, propels you upward somehow. But what about electricity or lasers? Like, How desperate a superhero fight do you even have to be in to be thinking like, I've never tried this before, but I bet that if I transform my butt into a prism and use it to focus my natural laser powers and fire butt lasers at the ground, I will be hurled into the air by the recoil. And as long as I just continue pelting the ground thousands of feet below me with my butt lasers, it'll be as though I can fly through the air. As long as I don't run out of teeth to turn into lasers. And you know what? It's a superhero game. It's fine. The people of this world, both players and, like, just the common people who live within this fiction, they're used to looking up in the air and seeing a superhero with a prism butt firing lasers at the ground below, soaring through the night sky like a flashlight hurled butt first at a rowdy sleepover. It's comic books. It's okay. It doesn't have to make sense. But when you pair it with these very specific rules about how it has to work, like you have to have energy expulsion. Could you just turn your butt into a rocket engine? No, of course not. That would be ridiculous. You can't just expect to turn your butt into an engine and transmute your internal organs into fuel and fly. No, you also have to have the power to generate lasers from your butt. Then you can turn your internal organs into lasers and shoot them through the prism that is your butt, and then you can fly. That's fine. But you're limited to a maximum altitude of 1,000 feet, and your speed is strictly limited to 10 times the speed of however fast you can run. So you better start working out. You better start jogging. Maybe start training for marathons, because the better you are at running, the better you are at butt lasers. Contrast this with the aforementioned long, creepy limbs, which have no mechanical support whatsoever. And honestly, that's fine. Like, can you run three times as fast because you've got giant stilt legs? Sure. Like, the rules don't say, so it's up to the GM, and that's fine. So as with yesterday, even though I do love alter limbs, I think it's a lot of fun, I do have to identify rocket legs as the dumbest thing on this page, just on grounds of implementation. An absurd idea, mechanics that don't quite work, classic Palladium stuff. But if you think a superhero who rains anal lasers down upon the city is the most dangerous one we will talk about in this section, you are sadly mistaken. Join me next time for an even more dangerous superpower on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. Today we're discussing page 241 of Heroes Unlimited. We're embarking on quite a journey here today because we are in the major super ability section, and today is the first day that we'll be discussing the Alter Physical Structure powers. This is a whole family of major superpowers, each of which allows you to transform your body into the very stuff of the elements themselves, kind of. The game is a little hazy about this, seems to go back and forth. As we can see with the power we're discussing today, alter physical structure, colon, electricity. Here's the somewhat equivocal picture that this power paints in its introduction. Quote, the super being either ripples with electrical energy, with energy crackling from the eyes, or actually turns into a humanoid who appears to be an energy being composed of electricity. So, you know, your mileage may vary on where we land on that. Like, when you actually turn into a humanoid who appears to be an energy being composed of electricity, are you made of electricity or not? It's not exactly clear. What is clear is this is the most dangerous motherfucker walking the streets. Everyone needs to be afraid of Tommy Tesla here because he is a menace to society. Note that I don't say that he is the deadliest superhero. You know, obviously that honor goes to Man with Machine Gun or whoever is the current bearer of that title. There are lots of characters who can do more damage than an alter physical structure electricity character, but they can also do less, right? If you've got a machine gun and you're up against some random hoodlums at a bank robbery, if you're feeling merciful, then you might say, look, they're just mooks. Some poor mixed up kids got sucked into a life of crime. Let me just flip this switch to the mercy setting and just shoot them each with one bullet. After all, Man with Machine Gun is meant to be an inspiration to the people of this horrible city. Let me show some compassion. Maybe, you know what? Maybe I'll even just bayonet them. Just a light bayonetting. And you know what? According to the rules of this game, that would actually work out pretty well for you. Bayonets don't do a ton of damage. One shot from a machine gun, just one bullet, maybe 5d6 damage. Maybe. Might be 4d6. Now that's pretty rough. It's not nothing. But, you know, 5d6 damage is what? 17.5 on average, almost never a fatal wound, even against mixed up kids who are only out there robbing banks to look cool on Instagram. You're fairly safe with one bullet. Now you may ask, how do I know this? How do I know how much SDC a mixed up adolescent has? Well, unfortunately, the book I am holding in my hands does not have this information. Sadly, it's lacking a lot of things that would be pretty useful to run this game, and one of them is stats for, like, regular people or any kind of antagonist. But the previous edition of Heroes Unlimited, Heroes Unlimited Revised, does in fact have a quick roll villain table in the back of it. And in the quick roll villain section, we find that there is a type of supervillain, the thug. That is a type 1 villain, by the way, if you're keeping up on your villainology. The thug, the mook, has an average of like 21 SDC plus about 12 hit points for a total of about 33 damage before dying. 33 total damage that a thug can take before they are dead. You're pretty safe with one 5d6 bullet out of your machine gun. You would think fighting crime with a machine gun is more dangerous than this, but no, as long as you keep it on the mercy setting, the single shot setting, you're doing an average of 17 damage, no more than 30. Most of these thugs are going to be fine. And a bayonet, that's like 7 damage, plus your damage bonus maybe. Almost no chance to kill somebody right off the bat with a bayonet. They get plenty of chances to give up, see the error of their ways, start looking up to you, maybe become your sidekick. I don't know. We'll see where things go. So the prospect of dealing with some hooligan youths non-lethally is actually pretty good for Man with a Machine Gun Man. Not so with the human catastrophe who is Tommy Tesla. Here's what you get with alter physical structure electricity. First of all, you get no fewer than 3 different ways to electrocute motherfuckers from across the room. Number 1, fire electrical ray. You can shoot this thing a pretty long way, 100 feet plus 20 feet per level of experience, and it does 1d6 times 10 damage plus 2 damage per level of experience. And this is essential, and this is fundamentally is the dumbest thing on this page, although we'll expand upon it. This damage cannot be reduced incrementally, like the energy explosion powers that we talked about earlier. Remember how if you're a 6th level superhero and you really want to take somebody down with the brick rays you shoot out of your eyes, you can hit them with a full-fledged fuck-em-up 8d6 brick ray, but if they turn out to be an underprivileged youth who reminds you of your delinquent cousin, then you can hit them with a mere twat-em-in-the-head-with-a-softball 1d6 brick ray. a very humane way to go about bricking criminals. Not so with Tommy Tesla. Tommy Tesla's doing his full damage when he hits people with this thing, which does an average of 37 damage at first level, and it only increases from there. That is already enough on an average roll to kill an underprivileged youth dead in one shot, and there's no turning the dial down on that. So you definitely don't want to be using your electrical ray on random hoodlums. Secondly, you've got your lightning bolt. This is different from your electrical ray. This is one of the many more or less arbitrary things that Heroes Unlimited expects you to keep straight. The lightning bolt has greater range. You can shoot it at 300 feet plus more, depending on your level, and it does 5d6 damage plus 2 per level of experience. Now, obviously, this is a little better to start. A much more reasonable 19 damage on an average roll, assuming your first level, and it tops out at 32 damage. However, that number is going to keep going up. By second level, a maxed out roll is once again killing young mixed up teenagers, and by the end of the campaign at ninth level, even an average hit is frying mooks dead in one shot. Your best option among these rays is the mini lightning bolt, which does 1d6 damage per level of experience, so this is much less damage. However, once again, it can't be cranked down. By 6th level, maximum damage is killing people, and by 10th level, even average damage is killing people. Assuming that you're up against average goons, I want you to keep in mind, who knows why somebody goes to rob a bank? Especially in a town with Tommy Tesla running around. You gotta be troubled. Maybe these teenage boys need money. For insulin. For their moms. Did you ever think of that, Tommy Tesla? You could be dealing with somebody with no hardened criminal background. You could be dealing with a con man, or a 2-bit hood. Yes, there are stats for the 2-bit hood in Heroes Unlimited Revised. Yes, he is called the 2-bit hood. Yes, I do love that this table exists. I don't know why they didn't bring it to second edition, because it's wonderful. Of course, Heroes Unlimited has no index, but if it did, he would be listed as hood, 2-bit, which would be even better. You may be interested to learn that a con man or a 2-bit hood, such as a young man with emotional problems from his troubled upbringing who decided to go rob a liquor store, maybe on a dare, and now here comes Tommy Tesla and his life's about to fall apart, along with his feeble body, a 2-bit hood only has 10 SDC. 10 SDC plus about 12 hit points is 22 total damage this guy can take before he is a heap of charred flesh on the ground. It's that quick when you're Tommy Tesla. You can do that kind of damage by fourth level, even with your mini lightning bolt, your tiny little zap of electricity. You're just like, and Tommy Tesla doesn't want to be a murderer. Look, that's not why he got in the game. So when he's up against some 2-bit hoods wielding their little pistols at him, you know he's like barely sticking out one finger, like, oh, please don't let me electrocute him. Please don't let me electrocute this guy. Zap, tiny little static bolt. If you're fourth level even, still low level, and you hit fives and sixes, he's dead. He's gone. That one little lightning bolt just courses through his body, smoking and blackened in front of you. You're not getting the key to the city for this, Tommy Tesla. Nobody cares that you saved the bank. The fucking bank. The gold bars in the bank. You heartless bastard, Tommy Tesla. This is not heroism. This is not cute. You're going to be standing there on the phone with the coroner. Sorry, sir, it's Tommy Tesla again. I've got some justice for you to clean up. It's not a good look for a superhero. But there's nothing you can do because you can't dial this damage down. And God forbid you should crit. I mean, you crit on a natural 20, which, you know, 1 in 20 of your rolls is a crit. Doesn't seem like that much. But consider that because of this game's fucked up action and round system, you're making probably 5 or 6 attack rolls per round of combat. So once every 4 rounds, let's say the average fight goes 2 rounds. That's once every 2 fights, you're critting. And when you crit, that's it. One more wayward teen essentially bug zapped out of existence by the stone cold justice of Tommy Tesla. This is no way to run a crime fighting career. You got to find other options to take these kids out. But there are very few for you. You've got electric flight, which allows you to temporarily turn into electricity and launch yourself a short distance. I say a short distance, like a mile, but you go that far very fast because you're moving very, very fast. Fortunately for you, you don't get anything like the damage bonus that you should for the speed you're going. The total damage for tackling someone as an electricity being at 300 miles per hour is 1d4 times 10 damage, which is an average of 25, which, you know, electrical fingers crossed, hopefully you're up against a hardened criminal, you know, a thug with 40 SDC, not a 2-bit hood, because if you hit a 2-bit hood at that speed, you know, we're back on a one-way ticket to Tasertown. They're not getting back up. But if you're lucky, maybe you won't kill them. You do have one other option. I guess your most humane option, although opinions will vary. You can emit an electrical field. It does 1d6 damage 4 times per melee round, so 4 times every 15 seconds, and that damage never increases with level, so you do damage quite slowly over time so you can stop before you kill somebody. The bad news is you can't choose your target. You just indiscriminately electrocute everyone within a radius around you. So let's say that you see a couple of toughs, a couple of punks, shaking somebody down, demanding his wallet. You're a superhero. You want to get involved. But here's the thing. If you extend your little finger and shoot one little lightning bolt, if you're like fourth to sixth level in the mid-level range, there's probably going to be a tremendous gory explosion. You got to be so careful. So what you really should do is just calm this situation down. Just go ahead and electrocute all of them. The dude with the wallet, the dudes who want the wallet, just everybody. People walking by in the street, just electrocute them all. Chill everybody out. Once everybody is knocked out, racked with pain, then you can sort out the good guys from the bad guys. No doubt this will make you very popular with your loving public. The dumbest thing on this page, on a basic level, is that you can't turn down the damage on these attacks. But on a broader level, like it shouldn't be this power's responsibility to do that. This game should have a damage system that allows you to defeat people without killing them, because it's comic books. Like the thing I just mentioned in jest of, you know, electrocuting everyone on the street to knock everybody out, and then you can sort out the good guys from the bad guys later. You can't do that in Heroes Unlimited, because the only way to reliably knock someone out is to kill them, which is pretty absurd in a game based on traditional four-color comics, fundamentally, where every other comic book in that era starts with Spider-Man swinging onto the street and punching out some street criminals and leaving them webbed up for the cops. I mean, I assume they're unconscious, is my read of those comic books. I don't think those are all like corpses that he's webbing up to the lampposts with a little piece of paper like, whoops, I killed another one. Love, Spidey. It's part of comic books. It's part of the fantasy. We resolve problems with violence, but it's not like gory violence. It's punch people out and, you know, they're defeated, but they're not like dead or concussed. And I mean, you know, we could have a lot of egg-headed fun dissecting and like deconstructing that aspect of the superhero fantasy where we get to use a lot of violence and not feel bad about it. But just on the level of genre emulation, if we're playing a superhero game, I don't want to be killing people all the time, at least if I'm playing a typical superhero. And the fact that the combat system in Heroes Unlimited does not give me an effective way to punch out some goons is a major oversight. It really requires every superpower to have a dial on it to turn the damage way down so I don't start accidentally killing people. And then when the power forgets the dial, when it doesn't have one, we got real problems. If I randomly roll electrical powers, I better just make peace with the fucking Reaper, because he is going to follow me for all my days as a superhero. And whichever way you slice it, whoever's fault that is exactly, it's the dumbest thing on this page. Today we're discussing page 242 of Heroes Unlimited. And today we're on to another alter physical structure power, like alter physical structure colon electricity from yesterday. Today it's alter physical structure colon fire, which we'll be talking about for a couple of days. This is a classic superpower. So many great flame-based superheroes throughout comic book history. Being able to turn into a being of living flame and possibly fly and throw little fireballs that never seem to really set anything on fire. It's been done so many times. I mean, the names immediately come to mind, like the Human Torch, the other Human Torch, you know, Toro, the Human Torch's sidekick, list goes on and on, Ultimate Human Torch. But the classic problem that's always arising with fire powers in comic books is that fire is a particularly dangerous and grisly way of attacking another human being. And that's not typically what we want out of comic books. You don't expect to open the pages of Fantastic Four and see the Human Torch, to name just one example at random, burning someone alive. Wouldn't happen. But that's really all his powers do. All he does is fire. So you have to think of all kinds of clever, you know, other ways for him to use his powers. There's the aforementioned fireball, which by widely accepted comic book consensus, it's more or less like punching someone with fire. And to its credit, Heroes Unlimited gets that right. It says here, quote, fireball. The super being can create and hurl a ball of flame that dissipates upon impact. And it does 3d6 plus 1d6 per level of experience, and you can regulate the damage in increments of 1d6, unlike the electricity blasts we talked about yesterday. So while you can roll all your d6s and horribly burn someone alive, because this is Heroes Unlimited, there is no comics code to protect you from the deserts of your life of crime in Heroes Unlimited, you can also, if you want, throw just like a 1d6 fireball, just a very mild, gentle fist-sized ball of flame that just gently lets criminals know you disapprove. It's like spraying a cat in the face with a water bottle, except the fire version. I don't object to too much on this page. There are bigger problems with alter physical structure fire, which we'll get to tomorrow. But if I could pick out one little quirk of this power and the way that Heroes Unlimited chose to represent it, it's that for this very destructive superpower, they actually did bother to give you one utility power that is not about burning people. You know, you get your fireball, you get your fire bolt, you get breathe fire, which is shorter range and lower damage. I guess just if you're a Dalsim fan, going for style points while you burn people alive. And of course, we'll talk tomorrow about the supernova, the ultimate expression of your flaming power. There's even the Circle of Flame. This is a classic from the comic books. Beloved flame characters like, oh, the Human Torch would often use it to encircle their foes. So instead of burning them, it just sort of closes them in. Only in Heroes Unlimited, it does not just close them in, but has the added effect of literally roasting them alive. The temperature inside just continues to rise. At 140 degrees, it causes shortness of breath and eventually knocks people out. And it just gets hotter and hotter from there, all the way up to 700 plus degrees, which, quote, creates unbearable pain, causes 66 points of damage every melee round, and breathing is impossible. And if the damage doesn't kill the people inside the Ring of Fire at that point, they'll suffocate within about 90 seconds. So unlike in the comic books, the Circle of Fire is not so much a way to trap people humanely, but a way to slow roast them, a way to kill them barbecue style. In fact, if you want to, you can even throw some criminals on the Barbie and then go do other things, because you can maintain the Circle of Fire by sacrificing 2 attacks per melee for concentration. So, you know, you're devoting that little bit of attention to making sure that circle is still there cooking people. And then with the rest of your actions, you can throw more fireballs or do your yoga flame or whatever. So that's very generous. You can have criminals in the oven while you're fighting other criminals. All of these, very deadly, very horrible if you imagine them too graphically. But then there's one nice power here. Radiate heat. Quote, the character can act as a portable furnace to generate heat. The heat either radiates around him or around one particular area in which he has fixed his gaze. This power is typically used to warm an area from cold and dampness, or to make an area uncomfortably hot and distracting. So there's a little aggression in here. I mean, you might use this offensively to make your foes uncomfortable, but why? You've got the Circle of Fire for that. Typically, you're going to use this to make an area comfortable if it's cold. You know, if you go on a skiing trip with the rest of the super team, and you do your skiing, and you come off the slopes, and you all just want to, you know, relax, maybe sit on some big overstuffed couches, play some foosball or whatever, have some hot chocolate, you can just radiate some nice, gentle heat, be kind of like a living fireplace, make everybody feel nice and cozy. But I warn you, giving your friends a cozy feeling will be the hardest fucking thing you've ever done. These other powers, throwing a fireball, one action. Breathing fire, one action. Maintaining a circle of fire that can cook a human being alive with a radius of 20 feet. I mean, not to mention the towering wall of flame all around it. Takes 2 actions per melee round. And you can kill other people with fire while you're working on that. Radiate heat not only takes 2 attacks per melee of concentration, it forbids you from using any other attack during the heat radiation. It takes all of your attention. And it has like a 15-foot radius at level 1, but it's most effective within a 12-foot radius. So if you want to make your friends cozy, you got to stand like right in the middle of them, and then they get to play foosball, but you just got to stand there with like sweat dripping down your brow. They're like, dude, do you want to get in here? You want to play some foosball? No, I have to focus. I have to focus on maintaining a comfortable temperature of 75 degrees. I don't know why it's so hard. I mean, honestly, you would be better off if your friends don't mind it pretty warm, like 90 degrees, that would feel good coming off the slopes. You would be better off just surrounding them in a ring of fire. Then at least you could play foosball too and enjoy some hot chocolate instead of just standing there with grim determination to keep people warm. I don't know why the one nice power is the very hardest one for you. And I don't really see a balance issue here at all. It's just this little quirk of design that comes up from time to time in certain games, and Heroes Unlimited is one of them, where there's like this little friendship tax. Whenever you use your powers in a way that is not for like killing monsters or stopping criminals, there's that little bit of like tax, that little bit of extra effort or resource cost to use your abilities in a way that is friendly and helpful instead of to fuck people up. And it's just a strange quirk. Anyway, the dumbest thing on this page and the moral of this story is it's hard to cook a human being alive, but it's harder to have a fun time on a skiing trip, which is why I personally recommend doing neither one. I am a vegetarian. I spend my winters drinking hot chocolate in my own goddamn living room. It's cheap and it's fun as hell. Today we're discussing page 243 of Heroes Unlimited. We are still discussing the Alter Physical Structure Fire super ability in the Major Super Ability section, and yesterday was just kind of a side note, just a little bit of trivia. Hey, did you know that it's harder to be nice to your friends and make it cozy for them than it is to cook human beings alive in the hellfire that composes your ungodly super being? Just a trivia note, the kind of thing you'd find on a Snapple cap. Today, we're discussing something much more substantive, something that is a core feature, and I think kind of a core flaw of Heroes Unlimited, although it has a charm of its own. This is an abstract thing. It's about the conflict between the sort of game and the sort of fiction that this game implicitly portrays versus the kind of game and the kind of fiction that this game actually creates through its rules. Very abstract. It's the sort of thing that people ramble on about on Twitter or role-playing message boards or, hey, Egghead podcast that nobody wants to listen to. But today, I get to make it very concrete because on this page, we have the two sides of the coin right together where everybody can see them in the form of a left-hand column with a picture of sort of one half of Heroes Unlimited and rules text that gives us the other half of Heroes Unlimited. So let's start by talking about the picture. It's over on the left-hand side of the page. You can check the Instagram to see this picture. But for those of you who may not have it open in front of you, let me describe it to you. Backlit by an exploding brick building, we have this guy. He's a fire guy. How do I know, you ask? Well, there are several clues. Number one, his head is fire. Number two, his finger is fire. But maybe that's an accident of birth, right? He's just a fire guy. He was born that way. He's a mutant, let's say, whatever that means, this page. But no, he is steered hard into his fire guy persona. He's using his fiery finger to light a cigarette. Get it? Get it? He's wearing sunglasses, which combined with the cigarette indicates to me he's a cool guy. Don't smoke, kids, but it is pretty cool. Then on his left biceps, which is facing camera, he has a fire tattoo, a ring of fire tattoo. Some would say it's maybe a little bit tacky or a little bit on the nose to get a tattoo of fire when you are a guy made of fire. You know, it's a little bit of a Steve-O situation with a tattoo of your own face on your body. But this guy wants you to know he is not just accidentally a fire guy. He is fire for life. Everything about him, it has to be fire. Even in his left hand, he's holding a knife. Is it a regular knife? No. It is sort of a almost serrated kukri. It's a fire motif knife. And he is standing amidst flames, backlit by an exploding building that he no doubt exploded himself using his fire powers. It's not particularly relevant here, but I'll also mention for those of you on Pouch Watch, he is also wearing a sort of utility belt covered in pouches. I have no idea what he would carry in these packages. Obviously something fire-based, maybe a selection of novelty lighters that he uses for different kinds of fire-based heroism, or I don't know, that shit they would throw on the fire in Are You Afraid of the Dark? Non-dairy creamer, as it turns out. I just can't get away from this trivia. But yeah, this guy's whole gimmick is fire. His whole thing is fire. His whole life is fire. This is beyond branding. This is lifestyle. You know this guy lives in a secret headquarters called the Fire Pit, and he's got a flame mobile and the whole thing. And this, is, I think, is very characteristic of what many superheroes in comics are like. It needn't be one-dimensional. You know, a character can evolve. A character can have hidden depths. A character can be a well-rounded person. But still, it's a superhero comic, and their superpowers are an essential part of who they are. You know, Wolverine is a full-fledged character, a deep character in many ways, but if he had the powers of Mr. Fantastic or the power armor of Iron Man instead of his claws and healing factor, it's a different guy. It's a different story, different situations, different guy. And the same holds true for superhero role-playing. You're going to create a character who is hopefully more than just their powers, but at a deep level, like if you're a fire guy, you're a fire guy. Otherwise, maybe in a certain way, you're missing the point of superhero role-playing. So the promise of this picture is, this is what we're going to do in this game. Alter Physical Structure Fire is for characters who want to be fire guy. You got a theme, you got a purpose, you got a lifestyle, you have iconography, classic superhero stuff. Then over on the right-hand column, here come the rules of this game to dump cold water all over that shit like a responsible camper. The rules on this page are about the supernova ability, a subpower of Alter Physical Structure, fire. Supernova is the big last resort suicide attack of the fire-based superhero. This is, once again, something that comes directly out of comic books. It was adapted from the Nova Blast of one of the many fire-based comic book superheroes, the Human Torch. And what it allows you to do is blow yourself up, overcharge yourself with power to do massive damage over a large area. And I mean massive damage. Seriously, 10,000 points of damage to everything within 100 feet, and then 5,000 damage out 100 feet beyond that, and so on. Now, this does take 8 melee rounds, which is 2 minutes to do, to overcharge yourself and explode like this. And it is totally indiscriminate, so there's going to be some collateral damage, but that's not the only price you pay. You will suffer some dire fate yourself for using the supernova. And that fate, like everything worth talking about in Heroes Unlimited, comes down to a random table. If you imagine the Devil May Care flame-headed gentleman to the left using a supernova, you'll see that some of these random options are better suited to storytelling than others. Option number one, on a roll of 1 to 10, the character lives, takes no permanent damage, but they can't use their powers for 1d4 weeks. Perfectly reasonable. We could do one storyline where Fire Guy doesn't have his fire anymore. It's a crisis of identity. He's got to struggle to find other ways to contribute. He can be burned now. And then storyline's over, back to business. The classic comic book industry 1-2. You get two storylines. Fire Guy no more, followed immediately by Return of Fire Guy, back to business. Number two, character survives, but permanently loses the super ability of Alter Physical Structure, fire. This is a bigger change for the character. He loses his power. You know, this may be his only power. Who knows? Or his only power, you know, worth a damn. If he's got like one major, one minor, it could be this and, you know, clock manipulation or heightened sense of taste. Powers that, frankly, if I had them, I wouldn't tell anyone. Obviously, fire is this dude's whole thing. So if you take that away from him, he's going to need to, you know, adapt. It's going to be difficult. But, you know, he could just grab some Uzis and be a non-powered hero. Heroes Unlimited is a great system for that. Guns are better than superpowers, let's be honest. And the theme is not totally disrupted. Like, okay, he doesn't have his fiery head anymore. Okay, he can't do the fiery finger trick. He's going to have to get himself a real lighter to light his cigarettes. But sunglasses, cigarette, pouches, flame tattoo on the biceps, preferentially, that's a Fire Guy look. But it could also be an Uzi guy look. I buy that as a bloodthirsty vigilante superhero. So fine. The player's experience of playing this guy is not totally wrecked. The theme, the feel is still intact. Likewise, character survives but permanently loses all super abilities. You know, okay. So you lose your heightened sense of taste or whatever too. Fine. Grab some Uzis, get back in the game. I don't want to belittle how important this is and how much it would undermine your goal potentially of playing a fire guy. Because remember, you can roll powers and you're heavily encouraged to roll powers, but some players may choose theirs. You may have chosen to play a fire guy because that's the kind of superhero you want to be. Losing those powers, it's pretty rough, but you can recover. This is sort of an organic part of this guy's story. And likewise, on a roll of 41 to 85, character is atomized. Well, you can't play him at all anymore. That's the final fate of the incinerator. Now you're on to playing a new character. So it may be sad, maybe a transition, but you get a chance to, hey, roll some new stats, try out a new concept. Okay. On a roll of 86 to 100, and this is the dumbest thing on this page for a complicated reason, as we're discussing. Quote, character survives, but the character's power mutates into a completely new one. Roll on the random major ability table. Also, roll on the insanity tables, neurosis and phobia. Already we're in trouble. We know that insanity section, this is dicey territory. Even if you could keep being a fire guy, even if you could keep being classic incinerator, adding two random mental illnesses slash goofy quirks to your character has just a high potential to be offensive, awkward, and not fun to play. But in addition to that, you're swapping out Alter Physical Structure Fire for a new major power, a new defining power set that is going to become central to the way you play the game. Obviously, this is going to be a difficult transition if you are a lifestyle fire guy, like the badass sunglasses-wearing teenage rebel here in the left-hand column. His whole identity is based on being a fire guy. It's one thing to take that away, so he's just like a fire aficionado who fires guns. But it's another thing to take it away and replace it with a new defining thing, especially because the player may have chosen fire, but now must roll for the new thing that will define this character. just to show how disruptive this can be, let's do it in real time. I'm going to grab some dice. We'll do what is described here, and we'll just see what happens to the incinerator if he's ever got to make a heroic sacrifice like this. Hold on. Okay, I've got my dice. So let's set the scene. The incinerator. His back is up against the wall. We get a few dramatic panels. He's sweating. He's starting to glow. Finally, he explodes in a huge fireball. Splash page, huge fireball. Crumbling cityscape around him. Until all that's left when the smoke clears is a crater. And he's lying in the middle of it. Probably in an unsubtle Christ-like pose because artists love that shit. His friends rush over to check on him. They find him lying there, blood coming out the side of his mouth. Sunglasses poignantly cracked, lying beside him in the crater. He looks up at them with half-lidded eyes and is like, "It's better to burn out than fade away." And then he goes limp in their arms. Silence. Still panels. Someone asks, "Is he ... The person who's holding him, alive, barely. "Yay," the reader thinks. "The incinerator, my favorite character. The fire guy, he's alive." Cut to, smash comic book cut to. He wakes up in confusion. He looks around, but he's different now. He's changed. After the trauma he's gone through. Inside, he'll never quite be the same. You see, now, he has a deep-seated neurosis. He is afraid of heights. And not just afraid of heights. It says here, quote, "The character is terrified of heights to the point of being frozen when above the second story." So I hope this is one of those single-story strip mall-style hospitals, because otherwise this is going to be a tough recovery. But that's not the only thing he's afraid of. Not only is he afraid of heights after being nearly burned alive, he's also afraid of spiders. Obviously, it makes sense. He was nearly killed by fire. Fire, one of the four classic elements, the duality of life and death. Four elements, duality, two, four times two, eight, eight legs on a spider. I mean, I don't need to spell it out for you, I think. You can see the symbolism. So this poor guy, the man who was once the incinerator, clutches his hospital bed, terrified because he can see out the window that he's on the gasp second story. He looks around frantically for spiders, potent symbols of blah, 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 death. And it's then that the doctor comes in with his clipboard. And he's like, "Ah, you're awake, Mr. The Incinerator. Listen, everyone appreciates what you did out there. You've been in a coma for a week. I just want you to know you saved the city. Word is that the governor is going to be pardoning you for your many, many acts of arson for this. So congratulations. Well done. You're going to live. You're going to be okay. But your body has gone through some changes. We believe that the mutant X factor that once made you a fire guy, to use the scientific terminology, it is mutated, and you now have a new super ability. Instead of becoming living flame, you have the super ability of sonic absorption and reflection." Now, I know that superpower, it sounds pretty complicated and pointless. Not ideal for the podcast format, you might say, but here's just the Cliff's Notes on what it does. You can dampen loud sounds so that they aren't uncomfortably loud. Like, you know all those times that parents and authority figures told you to turn down that loud music that you love so much since you're a sunglasses-wearing kind of guy? Well, now you're one of them. Welcome to the establishment. You have the power to quiet down loud music to a reasonable level. That's like character growth for you, Mr. the Incinerator. Also, it says here in my notes that you can reflect sound, so you can't do cacophonous and destructive sonic-based attacks. But if someone else can, and they do it at you, then you'll be okay. So in the likely event that you eventually someday in your superhero career fight someone with really cool sonic powers, your dumb sonic powers will make you immune to that. This is where the doctor is like adjusting his tie, like a stand-up comic from the 50s who's bombing. What else? You've got a radar sense. It isn't active all the time, like Daredevil's. It's like an hour or two at a time, and you can't use it while you're using your other powers, which is fine because your other powers are awful. And it gives you a middling ability to determine where things are around you and how fast they're moving. And your sense of hearing will be quite good. Maybe you can get a tattoo of just a chain of ears on your other biceps. How about that? Buck up. This is like disastrous for this guy's life. It's going to be a sad drive back to the fire pit. He's going to go in there and like jump out of the flame mobile and just like look around in exasperation. What am I going to do with all this flame shit? And no doubt the player is going to be thinking this same thing too. Like, they designed a character who's got the look and the tattoo and the powers and the personal habits and the history and the MO and the combat style and the skills to all back up this fire thing. And now you've totally pulled the rug out from under them. None of that really applies anymore. And instead, they're saddled with this random ass collection of, like, what is this even good for? You can, it says here, replay sounds that occurred moments ago in your environment. Oh, hey, fan fucking tastic. I'm no longer the incinerator. I'll just rebrand myself Talk Boy and I'll pull bullshit pranks like in Home Alone 2. How about that? Because that's the level of crime fighting that I can achieve with this power. I can play back clips of mobster movies to make bad guys think that I have a gun, which is a thing that would be useful to fight crime, rather than these powers, which are clearly not. And even if this power were good, it's just that it's so different. Here's the thing, and the reason this is a dumb thing on this page is because of the conflict between these two styles, these two modes, that Heroes Unlimited never quite reconciles. In places, Heroes Unlimited seems to suggest that you run characters like this flame-headed guy in the left-hand column. Characters with strong themes, who've got a gimmick, and you dive headfirst into like the powers that you chose or rolled, and you go for it. You make the whole character around it. You know, the GM is meant to be kind of flexible with you and say, oh yeah, sure, like, you want to be a character whose, you know, dad was a firefighter and they rebelled and then ironically they got fire powers, then sure, like, I'll just let you choose, you know, the high school dropout educational level so you can be this, like, juvenile delinquent firebug turned superhero. Everything kind of points toward that. Then, on the other side, though, this is a game that is very old school in the sense of heavily encouraging you to make everything random. And where it's not encouraging you to be random, it's forcing you to be random. Your stats are random. You're encouraged to come up with a random power category, a random selection of powers, which may not have anything to do with each other. Like, this fire guy, you know he's also got, like, adhesion or energy expulsion light. So it's like, I'm a fire guy, but I also do lasers. But I never do, because lasers suck. Like, that's not my theme. There's a random personality table in this game that you're encouraged to use. And when you make random roles like that, not only in character creation, but throughout your career, like here, if you use the supernova, you got to roll randomly for new powers to replace your old powers that you built around. When you do that, you end up with characters who are total grab bags. And even if you steer into that and just sort of like cobble it together into whatever coherency you can, when you play that way, your character is always subject to the whims of fate. In a modern game, like, let's say you're playing Masks, right? A more sophisticated and modern superhero game I've had occasion to mention recently on the podcast. If you're playing Masks, this, something like losing your powers temporarily or even dying, would be the result of like a GM move that resulted from a six or under roll that you made. And it would all be kind of done by fiat, sort of interpreting the dice in a way that creates a satisfying, organic development of your character and respects the play experience that the player wants to have, which all in all is probably a better way to run role-playing games for many purposes. This is something very different, what we see in Heroes Unlimited. This is, I hesitate to say realism, but it is like reality in the sense that random shit happens and often, one, doesn't make sense, and number two, isn't fun. But it's this weird sort of like social pact with the players and the GM in an old school game where we're just going to roll the dice and let them fall where they may and do what they say, and things may suck for my character. The incinerator may wake up one day and find that instead of the power to turn into living flame and blow up brick buildings, he now has the power to muffle the music at rock shows and usually not stub his toe in a dark room, thanks to the magic of sonar. And those are just his powers now. Obviously, this will not be organic to his story. Obviously, this will not be the play experience the player signed up for. It may not be a play experience they find fun. But the perspective of these old school games is, look, you're the one who chose to use the supernova. You got 10,000 damage and you got to pay for that shit. And you may pay for that by death. You may pay for that by losing all your fire powers and having to become an Uzi guy. Or you may pay for that by becoming a dweeb with totally different weak powers and a fire tattoo for no reason. And a lot of fire-themed accessories he's trying to unload on Craigslist. And that all may suck, but it feels real because it happens, so it happens, right? There is no golden box around your character concept. Shit just happens and the world keeps turning. Which I think is fun in a certain way, and it fits a certain gaming ethos. Nonetheless, following up a dramatic moment of self-sacrifice with giving a character a new and very possibly goofy superpower, and character quirks. That's dumb. And on a deeper level, the conflict between what this game is showing you in the art and what it's actually doing with the rules, that's dumb in a more abstract way. Today we're discussing page 244 of Heroes Unlimited, a day when I finally came to an infuriating realization. You know how we keep having to hear about the attacks per melee rules, the melee round, how long it is, how these attacks work, how initiative works? It seems like every goddamn page the author of this book is explaining to us again how it works. And I just realized why when I read this page, because this is a page that doesn't explain how that works. And the result is, the author completely fucking forgets. The author of this game does not know the rules, cannot keep them straight, and in the absence of the basic information retention of a toddler, has this bizarre verbal tic, this logorrhea of just pouring out new rules that have nothing to do with the previous rules for no fucking reason. This page, here's why I'm mad. Let me direct my anger appropriately. I'm mad because this is hard to podcast about. Let's be frank. Today we're discussing Alter Physical Structure Ice. Should be the easiest fucking power in the world to write rules about. It's fun to be ice, and it's simple to be ice. You cover yourself in ice, that's like armor. You throw ice around at people, that's like any of the other myriad projectile or energy blast powers, right? I mean, we talked earlier about energy explosion energy. It's a brick ray. It's like a punch at a distance. There's very little mechanical difference between shooting somebody with a brick ray out of your eyes or a fire blast out of your hands, or one would think, like an icicle that you throw or a ball of ice. You know what else you can do with ice? You could make a barrier or a surface to walk on. Your game rules would be in a pretty sad state if they couldn't accommodate, rules-wise, walls and floors. And the only difficult thing that ice really does is you can encase people in ice, which this power does address, but it doesn't seem like it should be that complicated, right? Especially in a sort of free-form-ish game like this, very driven by GM fiat, we don't need a ton of rules for everything. We can do some rulings on the fly about what happens if your legs are covered in ice. You can't run. You're very cold. But if you're strong, or you're holding like a hammer or something, maybe you can break yourself out. Ice has this much SDC, have at it, try not to chop your legs off. I feel like I could cover all of this in like one half to three quarters of a page. But that's because, due to poor life decisions I've made, I have a basic understanding of the Palladium rules system. And I'm very comfortable saying, when you throw an ice ball at someone, that's an attack. Let's say that attack takes one attack. Attacks happen in the context of a round, where you get multiple attacks, but we don't need to talk about that shit, because it's the same for everything in this game. You make an attack, it's one of your attacks per melee, so, you know, I might not even have to say a word about this. I could just say, hey, you've got the power to attack somebody with an ice ball. This attack does 2d6 damage plus 1d6 per level, and you can modulate the damage in 1d6 increments, all the way from a winter in Minnesota 8d6 down to a ice cube down the butt crack 1d6. Minimal verbiage required. As presented here, this power takes about two full pages, not including the illustration, about which we'll have much more to say later. And the reason is because this page is full of brand new rules of needless length and complexity. Let's start with ice projectiles. What could be simpler than throwing a snowball, other than getting the fucking range right the two times in the book that you mention it? Editor's note, see page 235. What could be mechanically simpler than throwing a thing at a person? Perhaps the better question is, how could we complicate this simple idea? Well, step one, this is not just one sub-power of Alter Physical Structure Ice. Oh no, we've split throwing ice into three separate superpowers, all with different rules. Number one, create and hurl snowballs. This is for when you're joking around with your friends and you don't really care about hurting anybody, you're just goofing around and having hijinks. Number two, there is create and hurl ice balls. This is for dealing with serious crimes, supervillain stuff, or if the snowball fight gets out of hand, your friend has taken it too far. You know how it is, sometimes you get tackled into the snow and it's like, oh, was that really necessary? Now it's in my ears and stuff. Now you have recourse to the ice ball, such as the power fantasy of Heroes Unlimited. Thirdly and finally, if it's the 90s and your writer has realized that ice can be sharp and make people bleed, you can create and hurl ice shards. How many attacks per melee does all this take, you ask? Oh, well, it's quite simple. Creating and hurling a snowball is one melee attack slash action. Creating and hurling an ice ball, one melee attack slash action. Creating and hurling an ice shard, one attack or action, correct? No, you fool, you ignoramus. You see, you have the option to throw one, two, or three ice shards in a single attack. Regardless of whether you choose 1, 2, or 3, throwing all of the ice shards you created takes only one attack. However, you get a plus 2 bonus to hit if you throw only one ice shard. You get no bonus to hit, as distinct from a plus 0 bonus to hit, no bonus to hit at all if you throw all 3 shards. What if you throw 2 shards? Who knows? There's a big difference between getting a plus 2 to hit and losing all your bonuses to hit, unless that's not what no bonus means. Who can say? There's no standardized terminology. I mean, it's not like this is the 244th page of a rule book and we've got rules to draw on. Every page is a new page. Kevin Sambita doesn't live in the past, man. Every page is a new opportunity to write new rules for situations I've never thought about before this moment when I'm sitting here with my word processor, writing a book directly for publication in real time with no pause for editing or reviewing my work. Mysteriously, throwing multiple ice shards doesn't use the volley rules. Remember, the volley rules are from the past. We're not thinking about that on this page. And the ice shards do 2d6 damage per shard. So that's 2d6 damage for one shard, or 6d6 damage for 3 shards. Can I split these shards up among different targets? Who can say? Pages ago, we took great pains to put special provisions and limits on how many people you could split up a brick ray between, and how the damage was independently capped for either brick ray. On this page, though, we don't care. Listen, when Kevin Sambita wrote that other page, he was another man then. You gotta get over this hang-up about persistent identity. Every page of Heroes Unlimited, it's as though it was written by a new and terrible writer, with totally different values. And on this page, we don't give a fuck where you throw these ice shards. But we do give a fuck about the difference between ice shards and ice balls, goddammit, because while you would think the simple thing to do here is have a power that just scales from 1d6 to however many d6, and you can make the ice in whatever shape you want, right? And then just throw it at people, right? If you want to kill somebody, make the ice sharp. If you want to hurt them, make it blunt. If you just want to like mess with them, then make it soft, and who cares? You choose any damage you want. No. Ice shards do 2d6 damage per shard. If you want to hit somebody with blunt ice, man, that's a whole other department. Go down the hallway, talk to the department head in charge of ice balls. We got different rules for that shit. Ice balls do only 1d6 damage. It never grows or scales. You can only make one at a time. Why can you make 3 ice shards, but not 3 ice balls? Who knows? Fortunately, though, at least this is pretty similar to the rules for throwing snowballs. Quote, create and hurl snowballs. The super being can create and throw one tightly packed snowball for up to every one of his attacks per melee for one entire round. I'm going to run that sentence by you again, because if you're like me, it just bounced directly off your skull and never even reached your brain. The super being can create and throw one tightly packed snowball for, listen to this sweet sentence construction, up to every one of his attacks per melee for one entire round. First of all, when you use 3 prepositions in a row, you must go directly to jail. I don't know how Kevin Sambita evaded justice on this one. And it's especially grievous because he used this very same phrase in all 3 subpowers dealing with throwing ice. And why did he do it? Why did he emphasize that you can throw one ice object for up to every one of your attacks per melee? Well, if we continue the description of throwing snowballs, we'll see that the range is 80 feet plus 5 feet per level of experience on this page. As we know, the snowball range rules conflict in this godforsaken abomination of a game. The damage is 1 point, ensuring that these rules are not only complicated but pointless. And the duration, listen, I couldn't make up this perverse detail. I wouldn't and I couldn't. The duration of throwing a snowball is 1 melee round. This doesn't mean that it takes you a full melee round, a full 15 seconds, to throw a snowball. No, no. What this means is that this power doesn't actually throw a snowball. This power is the power to give yourself the potentiality to throw snowballs, and the duration of that potentiality is 1 round. The actual creation and hurling of a snowball takes 1 attack. The action of using this power to give yourself the power to create snowballs is a non-action action that doesn't take any actions and lasts for 1 round, during which time you can trade actions on a 1-for-1 basis for individual instances of creating and throwing a snowball. And this rule's verbiage is repeated for throwing ice balls, which is totally different from snowballs, and for throwing ice shards, which is totally different from throwing snowballs or ice balls. The net result of which is fucking nothing. No change from the standard rules for throwing shit with superpowers. If this were just energy expulsion ice, and it just worked the way all the other energy expulsion powers did, no change. This is just a more complicated way to get there. 36 lines of rules text to get there. And God forbid you've got a rules lawyer in the group who's going to try to make this actually matter. You know, there's a previous version of this very episode that I recorded that you're not hearing for reasons I won't go into right now while my blood pressure is already dangerously high, where I suggested that there are situations where this actually does matter, where all this verbiage actually could hurt the game because you've got a rules lawyer at the table and you've got the GM telling him, so you've got the power to throw snowballs, therefore this, this, and this. And the player is like, no, fuck you, look at page 244. I don't have the power to throw snowballs. I have the power to grant myself the power to throw snowballs. So shut the fuck up. And it might actually matter because this game is so labyrinthine that every mistake is a potential landmine for trying to adjudicate anything. So I was already all heated up about this whole, like, throwing ice debacle on this page when I first reviewed this page. And then I just briefly reviewed the other couple of subpowers on this page to see if maybe there was something else that would be easier to talk about. You know, some goofy shit, some phrase that I could fixate on and, like, have an easier, less stressful podcasting day. And instead, I got this shit. The very next thing. The creation of an ice wall or shield. Quote, a handheld shield appears in one hand, or a medium to large ice wall or shield to cover a small area or a person just for an instant can be cast up to 100 feet away. So far, so good. You can protect something by putting a wall of ice in front of it. Quote, if trying to erect a shield or wall before an attack strikes, roll for initiative again. What? Roll, you're saying if I want to block an attack, that instead of making a parry roll, which is the roll that we conventionally use to block attacks in the Palladium system, which I realize that you, Kevin Sambita, don't know one goddamn thing about, even though you wrote this book. But normally, for your information, when we're blocking an attack, we would make a parry roll. This is well established. Even with, like, the magical shield for magical weapon category, we roll parry to put the shield up to block incoming attacks. You're saying, no, not today. Not here in Bizarro Ice World. When we want to block an attack with an ice wall, we stop in the middle of initiative and roll initiative again. I guess just between these two people? And that's a defensive roll. Roll initiative to block, essentially. Even though you're in initiative. And I don't know if this resets your initiative, or if it's initiative within initiative. And at the end of the power, kindly, we get the following. Quote, bonus. +2 as a parrying slash blocking slash protection maneuver. Instant creation. So what you're saying is, if I want to parry an incoming attack with an ice wall, I don't roll to parry. I roll initiative, again, within initiative. I roll double secret sub-initiative. But I do get a +2 parrying bonus that applies not to parrying, as the name might indicate to the naive, but a +2 parrying bonus to initiative. I'm sorry. A +2 parrying bonus to double secret sub-initiative. The dumbest thing on this page is that, I mean, we're used to incompetent rules text, right? I mean, none of these rules work. It's a book of 300 some odd pages, what, 350, 370, something like that. None of these rules really work. But we're talking about fundamental rules on this page. Striking with ranged attacks, defending yourself from attacks. As simple as Palladium rules get. In the case of a parry, literally the most common role in a Palladium game. For this one power to take up half a page, acting as though those rules don't exist, and instead inventing new rules, which are repeated three times and are fucked, it is unbelievably frustrating to me on a deep level. It's hard to convey in a relatively short time slot just how fucked these rules are, but let me put it this way. There's another subpower on this page that calls upon you to pre-spend two entire rounds full of your actions to do something that can be instantly countered, I guess creating a time paradox and just sucking your whole goddamn campaign into another dimension. I don't know. And we didn't even have time to get to that. Anyway, this episode needs to end before my heart explodes. Join me next time when we take a day off from rules text, praise Jesus, to talk about a perplexing illustration on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. Today we're discussing page 245 of Heroes Unlimited. We are still in the major abilities section, discussing alter physical structure, ice. And yesterday, I was perhaps a bit agitated about this power. We perhaps became mired in some rules issues that were dry and complex and subtle. But today I feel alert, exhilarated, because the game is afoot. We have a mystery to solve. A mystery that comes to us in the form of a perplexing illustration. You can find this illustration on my Instagram. I am, of course, MegaDumbCast on Instagram. But for those of you who are perhaps driving and do not wish to Instagram at the same time, for which I commend you, allow me to submit the visual evidence in verbal form so that you can follow my train of deduction for the rest of this podcast. This is a picture of a young woman, a conventionally attractive young woman, in a snowy landscape. She's wearing a peculiar costume, jaunty, slouch-cuffed boots and gloves, over thigh-high stockings, and an undershirt. Both the stockings and the shirt sleeves have openings in them, in the knees and the elbows, respectively. I don't know that there is such a term in fashion as a peekaboo knee, but if there is, then that's what's on display here. A peekaboo knee and an insouciant peekaboo elbow. The next layer of clothing is a swimsuit-like garment, along with a belt holding up the thigh-high stockings. We can't see all of this one-piece bathing suit-like garment because the woman in the picture is, of course, turned away from us. As is comic book tradition, she is presented in an improbable pose that gives us a view of her conventionally attractive full-lipped face, her largely exposed posterior, and her left breast. Both breasts would, of course, have been preferable from an artistic perspective, but such a position would actually break her spine, somewhat detracting from the erotic effect. Nonetheless, even from this partial side view of this young woman's left breast, we cannot help but notice that her nipples, nay, let us not jump to conclusions, at least one of her nipples, her left one, is hard. Despite the fact that she is an ice heroine here in the alter physical structure colon ice section and is immune to the cold, and therefore should not display this human physiological reaction to the temperature. This, then, is the case of the pointy nipple. Now, I could complain about this seeming inconsistency, or I could gird my loins and pursue a solution, and so I shall do. I began my investigation, as I do all serious investigations, with the two-step method of Googling for information and then following a link to the Cosmo magazine website, that boon to investigators around the world. From there, I was linked to a webpage with the information that I sought, healthline.com/health/women's-health/y-r-my-nipples-hard, a URL you will, of course, want to record for your future reference. Healthline's helpful list offers a number of reasons why a nipple might become hard, and so I set about eliminating possibilities. Number one, allergy or sensitivity, possibly a soap or shower gel, triggered an allergic reaction that made the nipple sensitive to rough clothing. We can eliminate this possibility, for upon closer inspection, we see that the young woman depicted here has no pupils in her eyes. This, along with the crackle of power at her hand, indicates that her powers are engaged, which means that her flesh is currently made of ice. This ice would, of course, not display the tactile sensitivity of human flesh, and would therefore be susceptible neither to an allergic reaction nor to the consequent sensitivity. The plot thickens. Menopause is another possibility, but the woman depicted here is far too young for that. Another possible culprit would be a piercing, in the usual case. However, in this case, the artist has helpfully depicted this woman in such tight clothing that I have no doubt that any nipple piercing would be immediately apparent to us. Indeed, I think that if this young woman had had a very large lunch, we would be able to see that clearly in this outfit, given its fit, which turns out to be relevant because another possible culprit in the case of the pointy nipple is pregnancy. However, at the stage of pregnancy, where the breast would begin to exhibit this behavior, other physical signs would be evident. And, perhaps more importantly, the pregnancy would be evident to this young woman, who would probably not risk a physical transformation of this magnitude, let alone crime fighting, for fear of harm to her unborn child. Less pleasant than the prospect of a young snow baby entering the world is the prospect of a breast infection or abscess. These conditions might make the breast sensitive, cause nipple hardness. However, we can readily and fortunately eliminate these possibilities because look how happy this young woman is. And not only how happy she is, but her body language, the coquettish look over the shoulder, combined with a sort of frolicking hop. The hop itself could have no tactical purpose consistent with this young woman giving a coy glance over her shoulder toward camera, rather than, as is standard practice in a life-or-death struggle, looking where the fuck she's going. And while we cannot rule out the possibility that she is feigning this flirtatious glance as part of a struggle with stakes so high that they require her to fight through the pain of a breast infection or abscess, in such a case the hop would be unnecessary. We can, Therefore, thankfully for us and thankfully for her, eliminate the possibility of the abscess or infection. Few possibilities therefore remain, according to our authoritative source on y-nipples-r-hard. Ovulation could be one possibility. And alas, my deductive skills do not extend to determining on the basis of an illustration whether the illustrated woman is ovulating. However, should ovulation be the culprit here? The proximate cause of this unexpected nipple hardness would be either skin sensitivity, which we have already ruled out, or arousal, which brings us to the final possibility, sexual arousal itself. Having eliminated all the other possibilities through a process that you will no doubt agree was thorough and scientific, we can confirm that sexual arousal is the reason for this nipple's hardness. However, we cannot yet rest. We must remain on the trail, for an inconsistency remains. Why is this superhero or supervillain in the midst of combat and in the midst of using strenuous and dangerous powers? Why in this scenario have her thoughts turned to the allure of physical love? Until we can answer this question, the case will not be solved. Fortunately, all the clues are before us. As I've previously mentioned, this young woman's powers are active. Witness the Kirby crackle around her hand. Not only is her ice form active, but she is activating another power. Is she creating one of the many ice projectiles of which she is capable? I submit that she is not. Her hand is in the wrong position, and recall that creating and hurling an ice projectile is all one action. One's hand would already have to be in a throwing position to throw so quickly. Is she constructing an ice wall? I submit that she could do so effectively only within her line of sight, but her line of sight is directed, curiously, at the viewer, to whom she is directing an expression that is more amorous than frightened. And while one might give such a smug look to a foe that one is encasing in ice, thereby immobilizing him, to use the encase in ice ability, she would have to sacrifice multiple actions, which is inconsistent with this peculiar hopping maneuver that we see. So which sub-power is she activating? The answer is, of course, staring us in the face. Witness the snow behind her. She is using the very first sub-power of Alter Physical Structure Ice to create a snowfall. Note, however, that she is already surrounded by snow. Why is she creating more? Not out of necessity, I submit, but out of preference. I direct your attention once again to the peekaboo knee, to the peekaboo elbow. What purpose could these strange fashion choices serve in crime fighting? None, of course. But the pieces come together when we realize that this woman, and forgive my indelicacy, is a cold fetishist. It's perfectly obvious, upon closer inspection, that this outfit could serve no crime-fighting purpose. It is much more like lingerie, and this is consistent with my hypothesis that this young woman is creating a continuous snowfall to maintain a thick snow cover on the ground, upon which she will soon assume a position that will place her bare elbows and knees deep in the cold, cold snow for which she has this bizarre fascination. What we are witnessing in this otherwise inscrutable panel is not superhero action. It is not combat. It is a moment of anticipation before this young ice woman, who is clearly at play, not at work, assumes this position and is, to put it indelicately, plowed. Only one question remains. By whom? You see, it is no coincidence that this panel depicts a young woman looking directly at the viewer. Only now do we realize that this scene is conveyed to us in the first person. We, collectively, as the viewers, stand in the place of the soon-to-be lover that this woman anticipates. Who could he be? She is, after all, made of ice. Any normal person, however attractive, would not be able to withstand the cold that she craves as an ice fetishist. Could it be another superhero, or supervillain for that matter, with ice powers? Doubtful. While another hero with an ice form would be able to resist this extreme temperature, their body would also be made of ice. So while they would be suitably cold, they would not be supple enough for the love making that she clearly anticipates. Regardless of her cold fetish, no one wants cunnilingus that feels like being repeatedly bopped with a rocket pop. No, this has to be a creature whose place in the scene we inhabit, just off camera, so to speak, who is both immune to extreme cold temperature, but also made of flesh and blood, a creature who would be at home in this snowy environment, perhaps a creature who would play into this young woman's winter fantasy, a creature who is just about to take this young superheroine in his cold embrace. Yes, we can now deduce the solution to the case of the pointy nipple. The nipple is pointy because of arousal, caused by the waiting, yearning, turgid Yeti, who we now know must be standing just off panel, It is his eyes through whom we see this strange vista. This really is a masterwork by the artist. And in the future, when you flip through this page in Heroes Unlimited, I don't want you to think about the naive assumption that this is just a simple mistake by a simple artist. Some horny freelancer who depicted a woman made of ice with hard nipples in the snow, because why would you ever draw a woman without hard nipples? This interpretation might apply to a lesser artist, but not to this genius. When you flip past this page in the future, I want you to think about the logical inevitability of the towering, fully erect Bigfoot just off panel, whom we cannot see, but whom we know exists, thanks to this artist's mastery of both logic and art. For without his impeccable craft, we could never have solved the case of the pointy nipple. Join me next time for an episode that can hardly be weirder than this one on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. This has been Mega Dumbcast. New episodes drop every day except for Sundays, when all the previous week's episodes drop in one big chunk for your binging convenience. Contact or check out the show wherever you want. It is Mega Dumbcast on Twitter, Instagram, Podbean, your favorite podcatcher, etc., etc. And if you like my tiny little podcast, consider giving me a tiny bit of money at ko-fi.com/megadumb. That is ko-fi.com/megadumb. MDC, Palladium Books, Heroes Unlimited, and all associated trademarks are property of Kevin Sambita. This season's theme song is To the Top by Midair Machine, whose work you can find at freemusicarchive.org/music/askagain. That's ask again, two words with a space in between. Dumbheads, I will catch you next time.